such wonderful chanting this evening. All of us joining together. One of the wonderful things about our coming and going retreat is that us is so clearly a flexible term. Some of us now here for 2 weeks, some of us just arriving this afternoon or this evening. Yet here we are. And one of the most wonderful things for me about our Zen practice is this Sangha practice. That Zen appears to be a solitary endeavor, and indeed each one of us has to sit on our own cushion, on our own chair, and we have to bear ourselves in some way, whether we want to or not. We meet ourselves, and it is fierce and terrible and wonderful. And we do not do this alone. To come together and chant from the center of our being, to call out from some place we don't know, calling out to some other place, calling out to this great mystery. And in our chanting tonight, I feel Linji's confidence. This great quality of Zen that we actually cultivate and revere, the quality of energy. It's actually one of the 10 paramitas that's not talked about so much, but bala, or spiritual power. We gather ourselves and find joy. I hope we do. Sometimes we find great difficulty, but joy in the singing, one voice, all voices. So, a wonderful beginning. And this evening I'd like to begin to look at the last paragraph of our reading, the excerpt we have, just a few pages. The actual record of Linji is not so long, but much more than we are able to encounter. And so our practice has been every day after lunch we read our 4 pages, a little more than one section from the Linji Lu. And I've been so appreciating how we do this, which is each person reads a sentence. And we go around the meditation hall. And it seems to me each person is giving a one-sentence tesha. Each one of us standing in for Linji. Each one of us allowing Linji's voice to come through us. And each person who reads, reads that particular teaching, that particular sentence, in some way that actually reflects their whole life. We often think that we are so hidden, that we reveal some things about ourselves but keep others under wraps. But when we speak, when we read, even reading someone else's words, it's a whole lifetime. And as we sit in our Zazen posture, upright and dignified, although we all sit in our own body, each body totally unique, sitting in the same posture, but each one of us fully expressing ourself in this great Zen way, our goal is not to be like someone else, but to be ourselves. All of you are doing quite well so far. So this last paragraph, someone actually requested that we talk about it. Usually we don't take requests, but it seemed problematic enough to me. And actually in my study of Zen, I use the great Josh Bartok method, which is you understand what you understand, and what you don't understand, you don't understand. And that's worked quite well for me. But sometimes we have to go into the thickets. So maybe into the thickets tonight. And I'd like to read a different translation. We've been working with Thich Nhat Hanh's translation, which is really lovely and has given me a renewed sense of reverence for Thich Nhat Hanh, one of the great Dharma lights of our age. And is so prolific, and at some point easy for some of us to dismiss. Oh yeah, just Thich Nhat Hanh, another book. but in this translation, his heart, as it does come through in his books, his great spirit that has touched this world, really changed this world, and all of us here Thich Nhat Hanh such a debt of gratitude. His teaching and his face and his wonderful presentation of the Dharma. So accessible, seemingly so simple, but contains such depth. And in his translation of Lin Chi, we can feel his gentle spirit. And great compassion. And some of the other translators of Lin Chi are perhaps a little more expressive. One of the things about the record of Lin Chi is that it was and still is quite shocking. And intentionally so. The Lin Chi Lu that we are reading the translation of was not compiled until 250 years after Lin Chi's death. And there are other teachings of his from maybe 80 or 100 years after his death are the first ones. And they are similar to the ones in the Lin Chi Lu, but not nearly as dramatic. In the first fragments of his teaching, he talks about the within the body field of five skandhas, there is a person of no rank. In the version we have, it's within the lump of red flesh, there is no rank. And in the first version out, it talking about a person of no rank, what an impure thing. Impure thing has turned into a dried shit on a stick. Of which there's some scholarly debate about whether it's just dried shit in a cylindrical form or whether it's actually a stick with shit on it. But I won't go into the details of the scholasticism here. Anyway, this is another translation of Lin Chi. This last paragraph. He says, "Venerables, you definitely must just be your usual self. Don't concoct special effects. There is a certain type of bald-headed hack around who doesn't know good from bad. At the drop of a hat, he sees spirits and sees ogres. He points toward the east and gesticulates toward the west. Without rhyme or reasons, he uses his hands to concoct special effects. He runs crazily around repeating fatuous gabble such as, when the weather is clear, great weather, and when it's rainy, fine moisture. There will come a day when the whole lot of them will be forced to repay their debt before Yama, the old one, by swallowing red-hot iron balls. Practitioners, you are allowing yourself to be attached to this type of wild fox demon, and you immediately come to adore strangeness and toy with it, blind imbeciles. There will come a day when Yama will exact your food money. So, still the molten iron is there. That drinking, that always seems a little problematic to me. Linchi is coming forward quite strongly. First, starting with this invitation. You know, how wonderful to be. You definitely must just be your usual self. All of the talking, all of the inquiring, all of the looking, and Lin Chi again and again, in very strong language, urging us to stop hurting ourselves, to stop looking elsewhere, to stop believing in these bald-headed hacks. But more importantly, to stop believing the stories we tell ourselves, these stories of who we should be and how we are and who we might be someday. His insistence again and again to stop, to become a person who has nothing to do. To be your usual self. One of the commentators on this says, the usual self is the Tathagata, which is the name the Buddha used to describe himself, the one who comes and the one who goes, the one who thus comes, the one who thus leaves. This usual self, so hard to appreciate. We are so certain there is something lacking. We are so certain there is something else to be, something else to get. So this great encouragement to be yourself. And then in this section, he is just slightly critical of some other teachers, suggesting that they might not have as clear a teaching as you would want. Really talking about what has always been so in the spiritual world, there is quite a circus out there in his time too and to this day. If we look at all kinds of showmen and salesmen, Tony Robbins may be a wonderful person, may have helped many people, but certainly when I hear him and see him, I would question where all of this ends up. And when I see the latest information on the new app that will guarantee you peace of mind and freedom from anxiety in 5 short minutes a day, I wonder. I personally have quite a reaction to a kind of positivism that says that if you only think the right thoughts, you will get everything you want, and the only reason you are not a millionaire now is simply some wrong thinking. There is a way for me that this teaching is quite dangerous and leads to a kind of narcissism and a kind of emptiness. The flashiness of this, the flashiness of the latest Apple computer that I now want over the old-fashioned AirBook I have. You know, it's so old now. It's like 3 years old, and I can hardly stand it. And the new processor is just so much better. But we are continually enticed along. More of this and more of that. And there are indeed teachers who are dangerous. We spoke of this the other day, was talking about ethics in Zen, ethics in spiritual teaching, and in this last paragraph he is talking about this too. And he says, you are allowing yourself to be attached to this type of wild fox demon. And you fall in love, come to adore the strangeness and toy with it. And one of the commentators on this section quotes a passage from the Surangama Sutra, which is one of the Mahayana Sutras that first appeared in China in around 700, and is widely thought to be actually created. They said they translated it, but it's not clear whether what they were translating from. But they quote a passage from the Surangama Sutra that says, Ananda, you should know that these 10 types of Mara at the time of the end of Dharma, within my Dharma, they leave home and cultivate the way. Sometimes they attach themselves to human form. Sometimes they manifest their own shape. They all say they have completed perfect awakening, but they praise lascivious desires and destroy the disciplinary rules of the Buddha. They say they have completed perfect awakening, but they praise lascivious desires and destroy the disciplinary rules of the Buddha. So as we were saying just the other day, there are false teachers. And indeed, though all teachers are blind, anyone who claims they are not blind. There certainly are spiritual teachers who say, well, I have perfected my being and you can come and study with me. I would agree with Linji that these are fox demon spirits, and that though they may be attractive, the price you pay when you give up what you know, the price you pay when you think someone else can do it for you, is great. And all of us should be beware. In this last paragraph, he also talks about having to repay your food money. And this is a reference to China at the time, in medieval China. To become a monk was a pretty good deal. In fact, you often had to buy an ordination because you came off the tax roll, so you didn't have to pay tax to the government. And compared to most people, your life was pretty good. You had 3 square meals, and you were assured of a place to stay. And in these records of Zen masters, you constantly hear them exhorting the monks to be more than just rice bags. The rice bag is the one who just hangs out in the monastery because it's pretty cushy. So different from these days. But calling on the monks to honor their obligation. And though only a few of us in this room are ordained, in a sense, all of us have some obligation, I would say. All of us have been given this fortunate birth where we have encountered the Dharma. All of us have been given bodies and minds that are healthy enough to come and do this intensive training. And all of us have glimpsed a life that is more than is apparent. more than is on the surface. Of course, lovely to be successful in terms of the world, lovely to do good things in the world. But there is something at stake here. There is something about being human. There is some precious opportunity that is so hard to penetrate. We catch a glimpse of it, and then we look right at it and it vanishes. Or at one point it's so clear and shining and radiant and we think, oh, now I will never forget. And then the next period we can't remember, barely remember how to breathe in and breathe out. And some periods of our lives we practice with great intensity and then the Dharma fades away and maybe we sit, maybe we don't. Maybe we go to retreat, maybe we don't. But the world is on fire. The suffering of this beautiful and wild world. The suffering of our planet. From these fox demon spirit teachers that tell us that the only thing that matters is more and more, and that comfort is the ultimate aim. All of us sitting in this room know differently. And so I certainly feel some obligation. And I hope you do too. And this obligation for me is to get to the bottom of the matter. To use this precious life. To use the gifts that I have been given. To use the gifts that we have been given in service of something more than we can contain, in something more than comfort. So I think that Lin Chi, in his direct and vivid way, this Lin Chi, that, of course, is not just the man, Lin Chi. There was a teacher, one of many Chan teachers in China at the time, and something in his teaching sparked his followers to create this movement, to perpetuate this, to put together, to pass on this spirit of Lin Chi that it is part of our coming and going retreat. Such a wonderful and vivid energy here that we can feel in our chanting, we can maybe sometimes feel in our sitting. And this vividness that has no fixed form, now appearing as great and loud chanting, now appearing as quiet walking with sore knees. Manifesting everywhere. There is no place that is not deep and liberated. So this exhortation to not follow the fox spirits that come by, to not have to follow every thought, to cut off that one who wants to seek, even to stop seeking seeking the Buddha. Lin Chi is quite unequivocal about seeking anything is wrong. One of his forebears Matsu said, you monks who seek the way should seek nothing. So let us continue to be our usual selves. Let us continue to exert ourselves to the utmost. Seems to be all right as they're carrying the player off the field on the stretcher. Wow! Here we are talking about the Dharma, and one of us falls over. Quite sobering. I hope, and I think he appears to be okay. I think I just put him to sleep. yeah, we say, well, it may be a long night, but we don't know. So please treasure each breath. Treasure this time together. This is it. This is what you have been longing for your whole life. This is your one true and precious life. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably. And we'll have a brief Dharma dialogue. And by the way, we have two doctors and Diane with Gary, and I can't think of anyone who would be better cared for than he. So we will take care of that, and if he needs medical attention, we'll make sure that he gets that. So questions, comments? Yeah.
Thank you for your talk. As I was reflecting on my own experience, you know, I see like the generation that I'm, like I come from, and maybe like the one after me too, that this idea of comfort is almost instantaneous, you know, that's just expected at the fingertips. And I think that's why so much of these, you know, these 5-minute programs, these Tony Robinson, you know, one talk and boom, that's it, that's all you need, and you're, you know, you're free or something like that. And I guess for me it's like penetrating into that, penetrating, like, I don't know, like being able to shed some light on just like the human, you know, the comfort is just such an easy way to go, and I just don't think anything really grows when there's just always this instantaneous gratification just made at the moment. And, you know, I know there's like that psychology test when the kids are like really young. They're like, if you don't eat the marshmallow, then we'll give you another one, but you have to wait a half an hour. And it's the kids that can wait are the ones that end up being like happier and more successful in life. And, you know, and we're like, the way that we're just like building our whole society around this, give, like, meet every need at the fingertips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like frustrating in a way, because it's, I just feel like, you know, it can't like grow. Like, there's nothing like difficult to be grown through, you know, and it's, I don't know. Yeah. So thank you for your talk.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for saying that, Camden, because I think it is really interesting, this yearning for something instant. I don't even think it's confined to your generation. And there's like a desperate quality, you know, going back as far as I can remember, there have always been best-selling books on how to get it instantly, or all you have to do is this, or, you know, and this is amazing that we go back, you know, to the 9th century, and clearly that was going on then. And you know, I'm very struck by what happened when one of our Sangha members fell over, and, you know, that could have been it, right? It's that shock moment of, we're going along, everything's fine. So I think the basis of this yearning for that instant gratification is based somehow on some knowledge that all of us hold in our hearts that we shouldn't waste any time. You know, and if we can get it in 5 minutes, because we could die at any moment, might as well do it. And in Zen, too, we say, you know, in fact, the last words, I don't know if you remember what you just said, before he fell over, exert yourself to the utmost.
Just kidding.
Just kidding.
Stop a little bit before.
but it's actually part of this. You know, exert yourself to the utmost. But it's a little bit of a bait and switch, because exert yourself to the utmost. We've been talking about this for weeks now. Really, that Zen doesn't do anything, and yet everything happens when we commit our life. This is a lifetime project, whether we have 100 more years left or a minute left. We have to throw ourselves into it completely and then just be curious about what happens next. And all of us know, even those of us who've just been here for a couple of hours, that anything we expect to happen is almost always wrong. And the actuality of our life is much more interesting than that. So I really get why there'd be a temptation for the 5 minute fix. And you know, it's interesting. Bob isn't here right now, but that study with the marshmallows is very interesting. You know, the people who are successful. But he's done this long study. He's the head of a very long study over since the 1940s. He's the third researcher following a group of men from the 1940s when they were 20 up until now, and their spouses and their children, to see what really makes a good life. And the thing that he found makes a good life that is healthier, more content, is connection. What is it called? The Harvard launch, a sweet little study. The Harvard
connection.
Connection. Love. And so being here in this room is actually a contributor to that sense of well-being, is what he was looking at. So there's success, and then there's success. And, you know, right, in Zen, I think we go for the second one. But who knows? We could also have the first.
In my life and in my practice and in my sitting here at the temple and in Bend down in Providence, I often will encounter or sometimes encounter a feeling of profound dissatisfaction and bitterness, which isn't always there, but it's a regular appearer. And this dissatisfaction, sometimes I don't let myself feel that. You know, I'll just be like, oh, no, don't go there. Even though it arises anyway, you know. And, what I'm hearing in Lin Ji's word is that, you know, in his words is that, there's some drive to seek. And I guess I'm wondering whether that itch is it. Is that part of it?
Yes. but so Someone once asked one of our Dharma ancestors, John Tarrant, said, you know, I think I'm too lazy to practice Zen. And John said, maybe you're not lazy enough. And so you're experiencing great dissatisfaction. But what if you're not... there's still part of you that is expecting, I can get that. So what... There's a possibility here. So... one of the three marks of all phenomena is unsatisfactoriness. And when we really, really can see that, there comes what is sometimes called disenchantment, breaking the spell of those things siren calls to us, those things that we are so sure hold our happiness, even though every time we've gotten one of them, it hasn't. Because that is actually the nature of all things. There is not a thing that we can get and have and keep and be satisfied with. And so there can come from that a kind of surrender, release, freedom, liberation from this screaming drive that says you should be more satisfied than you are. And that's actually not a truth either. That's just another companion. And so sitting here amid the flames of profound dissatisfaction, really profound dissatisfaction, there is, this too is a path to freedom. And so I would just caution, I would just point out that the bitterness may be, it is not the exact same thing. So just staying, really, because the bitterness is a story you're telling about the dissatisfaction, and just staying with that, there is a practice and a peace there that will also be unsatisfying.
And with that, let's take a few more breaths and then go on to walking.